Welcome to the APM podcast, brought to you by the Chartered Body for the Project Profession. This episode is part of our series of senior leader interviews hosted by APM Chief Executive, Professor Adam Bodison. This time, Adam is speaking to Dr. Karen Skinner of medical research charity LifeARC. The charity aims to advance early scientific discoveries to the point where they could be developed into the next generation of diagnostics and treatments for patients. Karen is LifeARC's Chief Project and Portfolio Officer, and she brings more than 25 years of experience within life sciences, pharmaceuticals, and biotech. Starting out her career as a bench scientist, she later discovered that she excelled at planning, building relationships, and getting the best from teams, which led to a long and successful career in project management. So listen on to hear Adam and Karen discuss the role of project management in getting new drugs to patients, why medical research projects are so high risk, and why project success relies more on people management than robust planning.
So I'm delighted to welcome to the APM podcast today, Dr. Karen Skinner from LifeARC. Welcome, Karen, to the APM podcast.
Thanks, Adam.
I think before we dive in to LifeARC and the project profession more broadly, maybe we can start by you telling us a little bit about your career journey and in particular, how you came to be in the project profession in the first place.
I started out as a bench scientist. I loved science at school and I just knew at the outset that's what I wanted to do. So after I did my O-levels, I did my science A-levels. Then I did my first degree in pharmacology at the University of Bath and then a PhD in neuroscience at the University of Oxford. And then during my studies, I did a year out in industry at the pharmaceutical company. It was Glaxo at the time, now GSK, but that was back in the day when it was pre-merger. So it was just Glaxo at the time. And they also kindly sponsored my PhD. So I did further secondments there. And from that experience, I just knew that I wanted to apply my understanding of science to improve the lives of those living with disease, to innovate and accelerate development of new and improve medicinal products. So after my studies, I got my first job. And again, that was at another major pharmaceutical company, Merck, where I got a really good grounding of drug discovery there. And then my very first taste of project leadership working in small project teams. I then moved to a high growth biotech company called BTG. All my experience up to that point was all in preclinical development, but I really wanted to move closer to the patient. And so I joined their clinical development team. And when I joined BTG, it was really small. It was only about 70 people. We had project leaders, but we didn't have a dedicated project management team at that time. But we grew really fast. We grew through organic growth and through multiple acquisitions. And we started to take products further down the development path all the way to launch. So the skills we needed were more varied. We needed regulatory, market access, sales. So our project teams were much more complex and our employees were across multiple geography. So it became apparent we really needed dedicated, skilled project management. So although I really love the science, and I still do, through my role on those project teams over the years, it was clear that my strengths were in that planning and organization, in establishing processes so they're fit for purpose, in getting the best from teams, in building relationships. So I started doing more and more of that. And ultimately, I ended up building and leading the project management department at BTG. So I'm really a firm believer that although scientific innovation is the core of the industry, great science just doesn't get the drug to the patient. It takes a large, complex team of people to do that. And it takes really strong project management to get the best from those teams. So that's why I've kind of focused my career more lastly in that project management space.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I thought what was really interesting about what you were saying there, Karen, was all of those aspects of project management, like stakeholder engagement, the kind of the people side of the project profession, if you like. They're really, really important because sometimes I get asked about, well, you know, is project management the same as product management? And one of my responses to that is that I always feel that project management has got much more of the kind of EQ side of things in it than purely being product focused, although clearly there is some overlap between the two. I don't know if you would agree with that.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I feel like, you know, 90% of it is that people piece, getting the best from the teams rather than actually, yeah, the project management of getting the job done.
Yeah, that makes sense. So let's talk about your current role then. So how long have you been in the role and, you know, what's a typical day? Is there such a thing as a typical day?
Well, I've now been at LifeArc for about 4 years, actually. So a LifeArc, I don't know if you know so much about them, they're one of the largest self-funding, not-for-profit medical research organisations in the UK. I'm a member of the executive team, and I'm accountable for their portfolio of translational challenges. These are really, really ambitious research programmes focused on complex healthcare needs. And then the way we're structured, the leaders of all those challenges report into me, as does the project management organisation under our head of PMO.
Okay, now that makes sense. And really, really interested that you talk about portfolio there. So for people listening to this, I should offer a disclaimer in advance that sometimes at APM, we use the word project interchangeably when we sometimes mean a program or a portfolio, just because it takes too long to talk about all three of them all of the time. But for this question, I do particularly want to ask you about the portfolio, because I suppose at LifeArc, there's probably no shortage of projects and programs that you could run and could pursue. How do you decide which ones to do?
That is quite a challenge, because there's so much opportunity there out there. So at LifeArc, our aim is to make life science life-changing for people living with disease. So we're working to source the most promising early research, validating those discoveries and supporting them through their next steps in their development towards the clinic. And as a not-for-profit, we can focus on smaller patient populations that typically attract less investment because they're not commercially viable. Areas such as motor neuron disease, for example, that's a particularly debilitating and life-limiting neurodegenerative disease. But it's relatively rare compared to other neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's disease. So we'll know that the large pharmaceutical companies, they will invest into research in Alzheimer's disease, but not so much in the smaller population. So those are the areas that we prioritise as a not-for-profit. And so we've got projects that are developing new drugs, new diagnostics, medical devices, digital solutions, all aimed at changing the lives of those patients. And again, it's on those relatively underserved areas.
Now that makes good sense. And what I really like about the work that LifeArc does is when people think about projects and programs, it's quite easy to think about, I don't know, construction and telecoms and infrastructure. But actually, you're kind of living proof, if you like, that actually the project profession is a genuinely pan-sector profession that is making a difference to people's lives every day. So that's really powerful. So let's tell me more about the project delivery profession within LifeArc. How many people are there within that profession? What size of the workforce is it? And is that kind of a growing area within LifeArc? Tell me a bit more about that.
Yes, so at LifeArc today, we're a relatively small organisation in terms of people. So we've got about 300 employees today, but I would say we're growing. So over the next year, we'll probably add another, 50 to 100 to that number. So we really are growing. I would say we're largely a project-based organisation. So the majority of our employees are in project teams. Those teams are led by an appointed project team, and then we're made up of members of our science organisation, members of our partnerships teams, folks in business development and alliance management, because we're very collaborative with external partners. And we're also supported by enabling functions such as legal, communications, HR and finance. So in terms of the actual project management professionals, we've got quite a lean structure, I would say, supporting that. So there's around about 15 of us with varying degrees of expertise and competency that we assign to those portfolios and programs based on the level of complexity they have. And then we provide guidance to others within the organization who manage their own smaller, lower risk projects themselves.
And what about the kind of challenges and risks? I talked before about the fact that this is maybe a different sector than most people are used to hearing about projects within. Are there some unique challenges and risks that either to LifeArc itself or to this particular sector?
Well, I would say in this sector, it's a very high risk environment. Medical research is very risky. We expect a lot of the projects to fail. Actually, I think it was it's a famous quote from Einstein. He said, if we knew what it was we were doing, we wouldn't be calling it research, which I think is always quite funny. So I think when you're conducting lab-based research, often things just don't work out. And actually, that's when project management really comes into play, because it's very difficult for project teams to drop their own baby. You know, it really requires strong project management to hold people to their delivery milestones and their go, no-go decision points. And when things aren't working out, we need to kill them fast rather than allow the teams to kind of flog a dead horse. And it's really important, therefore, to define the measures of success up front to prevent that drift. I would say another unique challenge is, you know, we've got a very collaborative working model, lots of external partners. I was saying in healthcare, no one organization can do it all. You need an ecosystem of players to bring new products to patients. And so LifeArc collaborates really heavily with others, whether they, you know, they can bring their knowledge or access to novel technology or their ability to co-fund with us. We collaborate with a broad range of stakeholder groups. So we collaborate with the patients themselves, with other charities, academics, pharma, biotech, the regulators, the NHS. So I think that really does generate some quite unique challenges in terms of alliance management, where individuals and organizations have very different agendas, different priorities. So you have to work even harder at defining ways of working and ensuring alignment on priorities when you have such a diverse ecosystem of partners that you're working with.
There might be people listening to this today, Karen, who are maybe project professionals in other sectors who are saying, this sounds really interesting. I'd love to be involved in a project that's making this kind of difference to people and to the, you know, to society at large. But they'll think, oh, but you know what, I haven't got a life sciences background, or I don't really know a lot about science. I mean, do you need to have a kind of scientific background to work in your kind of organization? Is it realistic to kind of transfer between sectors into a very specialist area like yours?
I mean, I would say it helps. It helps to have that background. I would say the vast majority of our team do have degrees in life sciences. But I mean, we have got project managers in our team who don't have a science background, but they are typically focused on our IT and business change projects. We need project managers in that space as well because of the technology that we're working with and just the smooth running of the organization. So we don't, not everybody has that science background. I mean, I consider myself a really accomplished project manager, but when it came to building the extension on my house, I knew I couldn't project manage that because I just didn't have the knowledge to challenge around the timelines and the costs. And I didn't have the time to build that knowledge either to do a decent job. But if people in other professions are thinking of moving into this area, I mean, I have to say, you know, what a wonderful area to work in terms of that purpose of life sciences, in terms of, you know, changing the world for the better and helping people living with disease. I think, you know, you can move across. I would say the difference is if you're thinking of moving, you just have to be willing to take the time to engage with the science. So not come thinking, well, you know, that bit isn't for me, I will just do the basic kind of project management. I think if you engage with the science, you listen and you learn, you know, I think then it's possible to develop sufficient awareness and understanding in order to do that job role effectively as well.
I was kind of thinking of the maturity of the project profession compared to other professions. I don't know, HR, marketing, finance, and so on. And in those professions where they are also operating kind of pan sector, you know, let's say marketing or legal are probably good examples. There is this kind of expectation, I suppose, that it's okay to move between sectors. And yes, you might pick things up as you go along, and as you say, you have to immerse yourself in the sector that you go into. But it's not really frowned upon in that way. But I find in the project profession, there's people sometimes identify with their sector before they identify with their profession, which is, as I say, probably an indication of our maturity being a little bit further behind some of those others. But I think that's also going to be an indication that we're making progress when there is that kind of freedom of movement between sectors when we get there.
Well, yeah, and I would say sometimes it really helps to have people that aren't so close to the science. As I said, you know, we're trying to engage with lots of stakeholders. We're trying to engage with the patients and with the public on the work that we're doing. You know, and sometimes we forget that the words that we're using are jargon that other people don't understand because we're so used to using them. So actually having people that aren't so familiar on the team that can actually call you out and say, what does that acronym mean? Can you phrase that in a different way? Actually really helps with our communication with other people in the community.
We're APM, the only chartered membership organisation for the project profession. When you become an APM member, you'll receive the resources and support you need to make an impact. delivering better projects with better outcomes. Plus, you'll access exclusive training and benefits to support your ongoing career development. Find out how we can help you reach your potential by visiting apm.org.uk. Because when projects succeed, society benefits.
Let's talk about the kind of charity aspect of LifeArc. I know that even the big corporates that I talk to are delivering projects, they find it difficult to recruit really talented project professionals. I guess trying to attract people into the charity sector, is that an advantage? Because lots of people want to work in the charity sector, and you know, because it gives you that real feel good factor that you're doing something directly for the public benefit? Or do you have the same challenges as the big corporates? It's just hard trying to find good people.
Well, I think we take a lot of kind of different approaches to help us identify the best people. I would say, you know, first of all, we really work to build our networks. I'm connected to a network of project professionals, you know, through membership of organisations like the APM, for example, and by attending events. Participating in that community really helps build the network, and actually actively contributing as well, whether presenting the events or delivering webinars or podcasts like this one. That also helps to really raise the profile of the organisation that you're working for. I know actually a member of our team, Matt Franklin, he's an early careers ambassador for the APM. So that's really actively encouraging our team and others to attend early careers events. Another thing we do is mentoring. You know, I gain a lot from my mentors that I had in the early days of my career, and I enjoy giving back to as a mentor now. And actually, it's not just about giving back. I gain personally from those relationships, you know, expanding my own network and gaining fresh perspectives from another's experience. So I think all of that kind of helps to raise awareness of LifeArc and what we do here. And then I think the other thing we do to attract people is we do offer a really clear career path for project professionals within LifeArc. You know, we have apprentices, project coordinators, and then increasing maturity levels of project program and portfolio managers, all supported by learning and development plans. So I think that, you know, when people can see there's an opportunity for progression, both in their career and actually, you know, a fantastic place to work based on why we exist and what we're trying to do for society, I think we don't have too many problems in terms of attracting people to come to work for us.
APM strapline, it's because when projects succeed, society benefits. And it's trying to kind of link, I suppose, project success with societal benefit. Now, obviously, the work that you're doing, clearly the outputs of those and outcomes of those projects are going to benefit society. But are there other opportunities, either through the way you deliver projects, the way you design them, and the things you decide to do, where you kind of add social value through the work that your team does at LifeArc?
Well, I mean, absolutely. I mean, as you say, I mean, at LifeArc, it's that societal benefit. That's what really drives us. You know, we're really driven by that opportunity to address health problems facing communities, changing health options and outcomes for patients, improving the lives of people living with disease. That has a much broader impact on society as a whole, given the economic impact of healthcare. So, I mean, we engage a lot with the patients. We consider the patient voice to be absolutely critical to make sure that whatever we deliver is going to really meet their primary needs. We're really committed, I would say, to equity, diversity and inclusion. And that's both in terms of the patient populations that we aim to serve, but also in the inclusive approach that we take to delivering them. As I say, engaging the patients, even working within our teams, we engage across the organization so that everybody understands that the role that they play in terms of the project team, and everybody, I suppose, is part of the success that we have. We make sure that we share the knowledge that we generate about science and disease with others in the community. We still see we, you know, play a big role in training the scientists of tomorrow in the work we do. We're building the ecosystem necessary to deliver those healthcare innovations, so forming strategic partnerships with others in the field. And then I would say our project management life, we really monitor and evaluate the impact that we have. So we really learn from what we're doing and channel our resources towards the projects that are really going to make a difference.
We couldn't possibly have a discussion, I don't think, without drifting into the elephant in the room, the AI discussion. Everybody's talking about AI at the moment. And I'm just wondering whether that's something that's already starting to impact project work, you know, your organization. And if not, what you think might be the impact over time as it starts to really bed in as a standard technology.
That's had a huge impact already. When I think back to when I started out in science, so when I was at Glaxo, it was all 100% in the lab, you know, wet lab, that's what I call it, where all the scientists were in the lab. Well, it's not like that today. I mean, now as we look at our labs, you know, I would say it's getting towards half and half, 50% dry lab, if you know what I mean, by working in AI and machine learning rather than the wet lab. So we're already seeing that big change. And actually that creates change for the project managers as well. So it's not just in the resources in the workforce, but there's a challenge for project managers in how we're storing, processing and analyzing that data. That requires kind of new infrastructures, new tools, new expertise. So we're seeing big changes there. And, you know, I think it's going to transform science even more. You know, researchers can analyze enormous data sets now and discover much more complex relationships. And I think that's really going to accelerate scientific discovery. I would say things like ChatGPT and AI art generators, they're already commonplace. And, you know, and you see some people concerned about the impact that's going to have, but I'm not concerned at all. I think they're only going to increase our efficiency. We don't need to see them as a threat. It's just a great opportunity, and we just need to embrace them as much as possible and use them wisely.
I want to talk a bit about project success, if I may. I'm kind of thinking more generally about the, you know, project profession now. I've seen recently that some people, when they talk about project success, what they mean is I've delivered my project on time, within budget, to the required specification. And then there's other people who say, no, hang on a minute, you can't possibly know that, because just because you've delivered the project doesn't mean it's successful. You know, success is about long-term benefits realization, and we might not know that for maybe even 10 years. I mean, I'm guessing for some of the work that you're doing, it's, yes, you've got all the trials and everything else that you might do, but I guess it's going to be several years afterwards before you get the kind of real mass data as to what the impact of some of your work has been. I mean, how do you go about defining what you mean by project success? And is it the same in every project?
Well, no, it's different in every project, which is why it makes it a bit of a challenge. But what we do actually is we start with the end in mind. So you start with what's the impact that you want to have in the world? You know, what do you want to do for this patient population? And then we work back from there and think, well, if is this the impact we want to have, then these are the outcomes we need. These are the outputs. These are the programs of work we would need to do. These are the people we would need to engage with. These are the inputs that we need. And it almost like builds your roadmap of projects that will lead you towards that success. And then also it gives you those measures on the way of these are the activities we need to get underway. These are the outputs we're expecting. These are the outputs we need to get, I think, to achieve that ultimate impact. Because a lot of the time we're working in that early translation space. So as you say, the ultimate impact to the patient isn't until probably 5 years down the line. So actually really mapping that out so you're understanding that actually you're heading in the right direction is important. And I mean, in terms of that success, I mean, with my project management hat on, you could say it's all about having that clear roadmap, that clear business plan and project plan. And as you said, let's make sure we're clear on the aims and the tasks and the timelines, the cost and resources. But actually, it's always about the people, I think, in terms of that project success, about pulling together that highly capable team who are really working towards that goal and communicating effectively with each other. That's the thing that actually is most likely to get you the impact that you want at the end of the day.
Let's talk a bit about leadership. Obviously, you know, I'm really inspired by our conversation today. You are a project leader in your own right. I guess you've obviously worked with lots of other project leaders. What makes a really good project leader, a really great one? Any particular characteristics?
Well, I think as a project leader, you're leading the team. And so it's about being inspiring, you know, and believing. I mean, a lot of people, there have been a lot of fantastic project ideas, but without a really strong sponsor leading and inspiring everybody else to get behind that, things won't happen. So I think believing in themselves and having that self-awareness as well, team building skills, because nobody can achieve anything on their own. So actually being able to kind of garner the support of a team to support them and work with them is really important. And actually then be really focused on the outcomes, actions and outcomes, to drive forward at pace. I mean, in the scientific field in particular, things move on so quickly. So you need to be moving at pace with that and being really flexible, because actually, as I said, things don't work out the way you thought they were going to do. And so you have to be able to spot that quickly and pivot and move and be flexible and then change the plan. So I think, I mean, it's quite a magical person that we're expecting this project leader to have all these competencies, but that's almost what you need. Somebody who can do all those things and then just drive to deliver projects to successful completion.
There might be some project professionals listening to this who are maybe relatively new to the profession or early in their career, and they're listening to, you know, where you've got to in your career and all those twists and turns that you described at the beginning of our conversation and how you got to be in the great role that you're in now. And they'll be thinking, I'd love to do a role like Karen's one day. What advice would you give to those people who are trying to get to that point in life?
Well, I would say dedicate time to your professional development. I'm not done learning now. I'm quite old now. I would say you're never done learning. And I would say so certainly at LifeArc, we have a kind of 70-20-10 approach to our learning. So 70% is on the job, trying to find projects and assigning yourself to tasks that enable you to grow and development. 20% learning from others. So certainly getting a coaching or a mentoring relationship, you know, attending conferences and webinars. And then 10% is doing studying yourself. More, you know, in the classroom stuff, taking courses, earning accreditations. I would really say find yourself a good mentor and then change mentors as you progress throughout your career. And certainly I would say as you progress in your career, giving back to others as well.
Yeah, I really like that, because what you're talking about there, you're talking about 30%, almost a third of your time is there on kind of learning, development, shaping and so on. You know, and that's quite a big commitment, isn't it? But it sounds like that's what you've got, the kind of investment you've got to make if you really want to make it in this field. So, yeah, brilliant. Karen, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast. So thank you very much for coming along, and thank you for all the work that you and your colleagues are doing at LifeArc. You're obviously making a huge difference to society, and it's great to see that in action. And thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much for inviting me. Much appreciated.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the APM podcast. If you enjoyed it, don't forget to subscribe, leave us a review, or contact us with your feedback at apmpodcast@thinkpublishing.co.uk. We're keen to hear from listeners with your ideas on the topics you'd most like us to feature on the podcast in 2024. This podcast has been brought to you by APM, the chartered body for the project profession. For more information on APM, visit apm.org.uk.